This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, a special edition today. VSiN last week was fortunate enough to have a bunch of Mountain West coaches stop in studio, and we're going to play back a lot of those conversations for you, but wanted to give you a little bit of a Mountain West preview off the jump, some best bets as well. Once again, you can always follow me. I'm at one Tim Murray. And real quickly, before we welcome on our guests who you've heard from before, just a big thank you to all of you for the reactions, the comments. Once again, I don't ever go personal here on this podcast feed. We stick to college football because that's what this podcast is. But I really appreciate you guys letting me just talk about Manti and what he meant to me. So appreciate all the reactions that you guys fed into my feed. It really helped me over the past week or so. So much appreciated. If you haven't heard that, feel free to go back and listen to that. That was on the ACC preview podcast on the back end. Please continue those 5-star reviews. It's much appreciated. Really helps out the podcast as we're trying to continue to build this thing up. And we've had a ton of 5-star reviews so far this offseason. So thank you so much. And thank you to our next guest who joins us right now. He has been on before. We talked situational spots with him about a month or so ago. He is Joshua Nunn from the Action Network. You can follow him on Twitter at StepOnADuck1. And Josh, I want to jump right into the breaking news. We're recording this on Monday, July 21st. This will probably be out on Tuesday, but the interesting news that we've certainly discussed on this podcast, and you and I have discussed it as well, is Jake Retzlaff and what that would mean to BYU if he left the program, which he ultimately did. Win total went from 7.5 down to 6.5. I know both you and I were able to grab a very juicy number under 7.5 plus 140, what it did to the BYU futures odds. But now he's found his home. And it's Tulane, and Tulane is the betting favorite to win the AAC, or the American, as we found out today, as they have rebranded, plus 275 at DraftKings and BetMGM, plus 290 at FanDuel. Unique situation, certainly, about Jake Retzlaff stepping in to a Tulane team that had questions at the quarterback position. John Summerall, as we've learned, was very much involved in the recruitment of Retzlaff out of junior college when he was at Troy. Ultimately, he landed at BYU. So there is a familiarity. I guess right now, with the information that we know before camp starts for Tulane, do you expect him to be the starter? Does this change your handicap on Tulane and your handicap of the American?
Well, it's a dynamic question. There's a lot going on with a lot of the different markets that are available in the betting menu after this news broke this afternoon. I'll be real interested to see how the approach is for Jake Retzlaff in this season for Tulane. I understand he's not being put on scholarship, and he avoided the transfer portal rules and regulations by simply just choosing to enroll in college and walk onto the program. So we'll be real interested to see what happens with him from an NIL perspective or how he is compensated for his time there. Now, the Tulane quarterback room was almost really shaping up okay without him there, with Brennan Sullivan there, who transfers in from Iowa, and then Caden Siemensa, who came in from Ball State. He was the MAC freshman of the year last season. And then they also had Donovan Leary, who transferred in from Illinois. So they already had three guys who were going to kind of compete for that spot. One of those guys is likely going to have to go if Retzlaff secures the number one spot. I think it's going to be real interesting just to see how quickly he can get up to speed with the offense, as they're now kind of in scramble mode with just 5 weeks to go before the season starts. I think it's an improvement over the people that were in the room. I still think it's a downgrade over Darian Mensa and what he did for the program last season. It doesn't change my handicap tremendous amount. I generally try not to be knee-jerk in these situations when we have breaking news of a player leaving, or in this case, coming into a program. I think he's a better quarterback than what they had in the room, but it doesn't really, I'm not dying to get off the win total and not running to the window to bet them to win the league. I think it's more of a reactionary trigger that these changes in the menu have happened, but not necessarily for me specifically.
Yeah, and I think when we bet under BYU, they were fully expecting Jake Retzlaff to be the starting quarterback heading into this year, and then they have to turn to what looks to be McKay Hillstead, the Utah State transfer, or Trayson Bourget, the Central Michigan transfer, maybe the freshman. So I would agree with your thought process, which is, you know, maybe as the season goes on, and if Retzlaff is playing well down at Tulane, we could change our mind on all the, how that all plays out. But yeah, no bet for me when it comes to Tulane. Looking at their schedule, they do avoid Navy this year, but you know, we'll find out what they are right out of the jump as they play Northwestern, they go to South Alabama, they host Darien Mensah and Duke in that game on September 13th, and then they head to Ole Miss. So that is a challenging non-conference schedule, no doubt, for Tulane there to start the season. But I wanted to have you on, Josh, to talk Mountain West, because on this podcast, you'll hear from Spencer Danielson, you'll hear from Dan Mullen, you'll hear from Kenny Amatalolo, you'll hear from Timmy Chang, you'll hear from Matt Entz. So five of the coaches in the top seven of the Mountain West preseason poll you'll hear from here on this podcast as they were on VSiN last week. And let's start with the favorite. And I'm curious your thoughts on Boise State. We're going to get to all of our best bets here in just a moment. But, you know, it was interesting hearing from Spencer Danielson, which you'll hear that interview here in just a moment with Stormy and JBT last week. But, you know, Danielson, a guy that is just full of energy. Obviously, we know what has departed in Ashton Gentry, but the crazy thing is when you look at returning production, Josh, this team, according to Bill Conley, has the most returning production in the conference. So a team that loses Ashton Gentry is pretty, you know, loaded up heading into this season. They do return their starting quarterback in Maddox Madsen. They have a pretty impressive offensive line led by left tackle in Cage Casey, who is a preseason All-American, and we had on our program. So I'm curious your thoughts on this Boise State team. Win total sits at 9.5, and they are as low as $1.25 to win the conference at Circa.
Yeah, I mean, such a special talent to have to replace an Ashton Gentry, and was a clear focal point of their offense last season, and a clear focal point for defenses to load the box with 8 or 9 players and really try to contain that rushing attack. Most of those opponents last year in 2024 were unsuccessful in doing so. I think they do have some significant talent coming back. Syer Gaines is a pretty decent young talent there at running back for Boise State. Malik Sherrod comes in from Fresno State. So the room is not left empty. And with less of a focus on one star player, it might actually help to open up some holes as they're going to pass more. And we've got another year in the system for Maddox Madsen. So I think that the offense, especially the running game, won't take a significant step back. It won't be the Ashton Gentry gaudy numbers from one player, but I think overall they'll be very serviceable. And Boise State, I mean, there are a couple of tricky spots here on the schedule for them this season. I'm not dying to go over 9.5. I think that first game of the season when they have to go to Tampa at USF is going to be a little bit tougher than many people really give them credit for. They don't go to the East Coast a tremendous amount, so the travel is going to be just something they have to battle. And I look at a game like last year when they went to Georgia Southern, who was a significantly less talented defensive squad, and it was back and forth the entire game, and they ended up winning the game by 11, didn't cover the closing number, but it's just one of those where I think USF has some talent and some pieces that can really make life tough for Boise State. And USF has an identity of what they want to be. I like their coach, Golish, and I think they have a real vision for what that program is expected to be this season or could be. So I think that that first game of the season for Boise State could be tough. Obviously, they go to the Cathedral at Notre Dame on October 4th, which will be a real strong barometer for any amount of college football playoff tournament noise that this Boise State Broncos team may be able to make, but those two for sure are no gimmies. And then at Air Force will be tough, and you know, they'll be better than everybody else, but still have to play UNLV at San Diego State, which will be an emerging team in Mountain West play. So I mean, I'm not dying to go over 9.5 here, especially with that juice at -185 or worse.
Yeah, I'm not either. However, I have bet them to win the conference. As we dove into it, I just looked at $1.25 being the price at Circa. you know, I agree with you. I think South Florida in that heat, 5:30 local kick time, it's going to be really challenging down there at South Florida. So we've seen the market kind of waver a little bit. 9.5s are out there. If you like USF, there's an 8 right now at Circa. We'll see what that does as we get the closer to kick time. You're right. They do play Air Force, but they don't play San Jose State. They get UNLV, Fresno State, and Colorado State all at home. So you get the number 2, the number 4, and the number, I believe, 5 preseason poll teams at home on the Smurf turf. And if we get to a championship game, which I think most of us expect Boise State to be in the Mountain West championship game, minus 125 will be significantly lower than the money line. So if you feel like you have to get off, certainly you could do that. So I did bet Boise State to win the conference at minus 125. We had Brad Powers on VSiN last week, and he said that he has Boise State power rated 7 points better than everybody in the G5. So I agree with you. I would not play 9.5. I would not play to make or miss to the playoff. But I think $1.25 at Circa is a pretty palatable price on Boise State. I want to get to your best bets here in a moment, but I wanted to throw one your way because when you look at schedules, and that's something that you and I really like to do. And, you know, I brought up the example of Louisville a couple years ago, and a lot of folks out there that I respected said, look at Louisville's schedule. This is a cakewalk to the ACC championship game. And lo and behold, in Jeff Brohm's first year, it was. And they got there. When I look at what San Jose State brings back, and yes, they lose Nick Nash and they lose Justin Lockhart, which is a massive loss, over, you know, 2,200 yards of receiving. So a huge, huge void there at the wide receiver position. But they seem excited about what they're bringing in via the portal and what they've got there. They're excited about Walker Egitt, their quarterback, being the main guy. But I look at the schedule, Josh, and you don't play Boise State. You don't play UNLV. You don't play Colorado State. That's 1, 2, and 4 in the preseason Mountain West poll. And then you get Air Force at home. You get Hawaii at home. And you get Fresno State at home. So if we're looking at the preseason Mountain West poll, Boise State 1, UNLV 2, San Jose State 3, Colorado State 4, Fresno 5, Air Force 6, Hawaii 7. You get 3 of those teams at home. One of those teams is you, and 3 of those teams not on your schedule. So to me, they get the schedule lottery to work their way. I believe in Coach Ken Niumatalolo quite a bit. The whole staff is back. Craig Stutzman, a rising offensive coordinator. I think San Jose State, I don't know if they're going to win the conference. I would say they won't win the conference, but I really like the path. And at plus 220 to reach the Mountain West Championship, that was a bet worth placing for me.
Very much so. The schedule itself is really conducive to one that you'd want to necessitate piling up the wins. Second year in the Stutzman system will also hopefully see some improvement for the Spartans offensively. You're never going to replace a generational talent such as that of Nick Nash. And even, I mean, like you had mentioned, Lockhart is a very, very, was a very, very solid number two receiver for San Jose State last season. But I think that the room shores up okay to at least mitigate some of that significant loss. I would also assume that San Jose State runs the football a little better than they did at times last season, where there were just several games that they just could not put it together on the ground. So a lot fell on the shoulders of quarterback Walker Egitt, who, again, second year of the system, it'll just be that much more cohesive of a group. I think offensively they should be fine, and defensively they're going to be strong in Mountain West play as well. The schedule is one where, when I was looking at it for San Jose State, really the tricky spots are back-to-back road trips at elevation, where they've got to go to Wyoming on October 11th, and then they have to double back for Logan, Utah on October 18th. And could be one of those games that they would possibly drop if you got some tired legs and the oxygen's not going. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's harder to do at elevation. But other than that, I think this schedule lines up just fine for San Jose State to be right in the thick of it.
All right, let's get to Hawaii. There's a disagreement, but we both can win. So I'm all about how we could reach across the aisle here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast and make us everyone happy. And if we can land this plane on 6 wins, we're both good to go. So we've got the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, friend of the show, Timmy Chang. Really appreciated Coach Chang stopping in studio. Love talking to him. He is excited about Micah Alejado, the quarterback who was just terrific in their season finale against New Mexico, talked about his leadership. You'll hear that conversation a little bit later on. So here's the interesting thing about win totals, ladies and gentlemen. You can look around and you can find different numbers. So a bet that Josh has made, under 6.5 at -140 juice. You could still get that bet. You have to pay a little bit more juice at -$1.60. And then a bet that I made was over 5.5 at -144 at FanDuel. So in theory, we both could be winners. And I do think 6 wins, Josh, is the most likely outcome for the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. They do not have to play Boise State, which I think is beneficial. And they got to take care of business on the island, right? 6-1 ATS a year ago on the island, a couple of close losses. You open up against Stanford, where that market has moved towards Hawaii. You play Sam Houston State, who just lost their coach to Temple, so I think there'll be a team in flux. You play FCS Portland State. You got Fresno State in your 5th straight game. That could be certainly a challenge. Then you get Utah State off a bye, San Diego State, and then Wyoming to wrap up the season. Those are your home games. On the road, you're at UNLV, at San Jose State, at Colorado State, at Air Force. Well, you'll be an underdog in all 4 of those games. But, you know, when you're talking about win totals and you're hoping for toss-ups to go your way, I'd much rather have the easier teams at home and the more challenging teams on the road. So if Hawaii can take care of business, go 6-1 on the island, they get to 6 wins and we're both happy. So, look, I'm excited about this Hawaii team. I know Coach Chang is very excited, as you would imagine. They bring back a bunch of production at the wide receiver position. They bring back 9 starters on defense. So I'm over 5.5, but you're under 6.5.
Yeah, and there's a lot to merit what you had said there. I think that the quarterback play was – it's been wildly inconsistent during Timmy Chang's time here on the island, and really staggering that the run-and-shoot offense just has not been running, especially when you had Braden Shager there for multiple seasons and with a guy who ran the system so effectively himself. It was just – it's been very wildly inconsistent. There's been too many negative plays. Generally, run-and-shoot teams are able to at least have some threat of explosive run game when you're spreading out the defense and you're usually seeing 5-man boxes. And it just didn't really come to fruition last year. They didn't have as much punch as you would have hoped. We saw it really early on, too, that they just struggled against FCS Delaware State so badly. They had some good performances on the island, and I think we'll continue to see that. It's a significantly different team away from home than it was last season. I really want to buy into the young quarterback, Micah, but I just am pausing on that as a lot of the damage was done when they were down 52-3 against Utah State. And then they did have the home performance to close out the season, stifling New Mexico Lobo Bowl hopes. But Utah State and New Mexico were both historically weak defenses, possibly some of the worst defensive football teams we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years at FBS, at the FBS level. So I'm just wanting to see it a little bit with some more competent defensive foes coming in. And, you know, he could be the guy. He could be the next really great dynamic quarterback that we see in a Hawaii uniform. But I just have some pause. I think when we're analyzing the schedule, you hit it right on the head. The road games are going to be really tough to win at Arizona, at Air Force, Colorado State, San Jose State, and UNLV. They'll be not only underdogs, but significant underdogs of probably 7 or 10 points in almost every one of those contests. And so you really have to get the ones at home that you should win. Sam Houston State, Portland State, Utah State, all winnable, and you should win those. So it comes down to, are you going to beat an emerging San Diego State team? Can you beat Stanford? And then that last game of the season, and I really thought this was an important hook when I was assessing my regular season win future plays. I wanted 6.5 because I think that the goal this year is to fight, claw, and scratch your way to get to a bowl game. And 6-6 would be a real major step in the right direction for Timmy Chang in Hawaii. They were 5-7 last season, as you'll recall, but 2 of those wins were against FCS foes. So really, even they were not that close to a bowl game, as that would have required 7 wins playing 2 FCS level of competition teams. So I think it's all about getting to 6-6 and securing that spot in the bowl game. And I think it'll come down to that last game of the season hosting Wyoming, where you're trying to win a late game, probably the last game of the schedule. So it'll be a 3 o'clock in the morning Eastern time sweat that will be up talking to each other during that time. But I think you win that game, you go bowling. If you don't beat Wyoming, which you should beat Wyoming at home, but if you don't beat Wyoming at home to get to a bowl, it could be trouble for Timmy Chang going into next season. So
yeah,
I think 6-6 is the number. I personally thought the hook was more valuable for me going under 6.5 at that time. It's really not terrible to go over 5.5 and try and thread the needle there, but certainly wouldn't go over 6.5.
Yeah, I wouldn't go over 6.5 either. And it's funny to think back to the last two regular season finales for Hawaii. They played Colorado State. They were 5-6, and that was a nuts game where I think Hawaii won. I want to say people might remind me. I want to say it was some late game heroics to get Hawaii that win over Colorado State to keep them from bowling. And then last year, New Mexico State went up to a 6.5-point favorite, I think large part because Braden Schrager was out and Micah Elejado got the start, but also the expectation for New Mexico to get to a bowl game and Hawaii knocked them off. So hopefully, I will. I do feel like I will be sweating that last game, and it'll be interesting. No, needless to say. All right, let's get to San Diego State, a team that, you know, I was on San Diego radio talking to my buddy John Schaefer, who's the voice of the Aztecs, and you know, he asked about this win total and the curiosity. I should have, you know, tapped into your insight before I went on that radio show, because Sean Lewis, year two, we all remember what he did at Kent State, was very impressive. It was a very unceremonious run at Colorado as the offensive coordinator. Real big challenges last year. They bring back a bunch on defense. The win total sits at 4.5. You bet it over at -105. It is now available at over -130. So we've seen 25 cents move towards the over, but still 4.5 at BetMGM. Why do you like the Aztecs to go over their win total?
Well, something that is really not – doesn't really go hand in hand with Sean Lewis teams as defense, but when you look at the results of San Diego State last season and you dive into some of the advanced analytics, the defense actually didn't play too terribly bad in some stretches of the season and really catapulted this group to wins against Hawaii and Wyoming last year. And now they have 10 starters back and should be improved at all three levels of the defense. So I would expect that we see marginal incremental improvement there in the back seven from San Diego State. And then I had written this up when we had talked win totals later on, or earlier in the summer, but you could really argue that last year, no Mountain West team had worse quarterback play than San Diego State last season. Quarterbacks averaged just 206 yards per game with 15 total touchdowns, which is just so atypical for a Sean Lewis-led offense. And they surrendered just way too many negative plays. They took 33 sacks. And it was just they could not get out of their own way. And it really came down to them just not having the personnel to be equipped to run that style of offense. It was a complete 180 over the style of offense that was rolled out there by Brady Hoke. And I just feel at this current time with what they have brought back offensively and who they went out and got in the portal, we should see significant upgraded quarterback play. I like Jaden Denegal, who comes in from Michigan. I think he'll be a little bit better suited to run the system, and they'll have Wildcat quarterback Bert Emanuel, who comes in from Central Michigan, was a real running threat for the Chippewas last couple of seasons. So I think that there's going to be a dynamic element there. And I just feel as though with what they have coming back in the receiver room, I mean, everything just looks better offensively, and they'll be much more competent offensively to run the system. So you'll have marginal or even significant upgraded talent and improvement with the scheme offensively. The defense will be better. And then I just look at the schedule, and it's just a team that's going to have many shots on goal, right? You're going to have plenty of winnables in the slate. So they should blast Stony Brook. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see San Diego State pluck one of Washington State or Cal, both two descending programs there. And then they go to Northern Illinois, who lost their defensive coordinator to Fresno State, and he took plenty of talent with him to Fresno State from Northern Illinois. They're changing schemes, changing coordinators, and trying to work some things out offensively. Certainly not out of the realm of possibility for them to go there and win. You get Colorado State at home. You get Nevada on the schedule. You have Wyoming on the schedule, and you avoid a trip to Laredice, which is important. The road trip to Hawaii is likely going to be tough, but not unwinnable there. Current power ratings have that one as call it Hawaii minus four. So, I mean, not out of the realm of possibility. And then last game of the season, which we could have the 4.5 locked up by then, but they're at New Mexico to end the season. And I'm guessing they're going for a bowl game in that spot. They'll probably be laying 13 or so, which I may not do, but that's probably the one they win to get to six wins. So I was projecting this win total earlier in the spring, and I was assuming it opened 5.5. When it opened 4.5, I just felt like that number was off. And so I had no choice. I don't play a lot of overs when it comes to regular season wins. 90 to 95% of my regular season wins are going to be unders, but this is the lone over I have this season.
Lone over, the Aztecs for Josh. All right, let's wrap on this because we will get to Spencer Danielson on the other side, and we'll hear from five head coaches here on this podcast, including the head coach of Fresno State, Matt Entz, who very impressive. Really enjoyed talking to him. Talking about his time at North Dakota State, his time at USC, where he was on that coaching staff, and now the first-year head coach of Fresno State. They are uncertain at the quarterback position, even though E.J. Warner is certainly the favorite to win that job, but they have not named a starter yet for Fresno State. Looking around the futures market, FanDuel has Fresno at 10-1. To win the conference. DraftKings and BetMGM are at 9-1. Circa's at plus 750 if you want to know that. And then week zero, they are a 2-touchdown road dog at Kansas. And based off of what you put out there on social media, Josh, you've got a little flyer on them to win this conference, and you like them in week zero against Kansas.
Yeah, I think Fresno State is a real interesting team this season. I think that the coaching hire of Matt Entz is a complete home run. Fresno State for years and years has been known as a team that played physical football offensively and defensively. They like to run the football. They use multiple tight end sets in unique situations for their tight ends. And I think that this year with Entz and the coordinators that they hired, Josh Davis, who comes in from FCS University of South Dakota, and also Nick Benedetto, who's a really, really strong up-and-coming defensive coordinator who was at Northern Illinois the last couple of seasons, I think that the coordinator and coaching hires are significant upgrades over what Fresno State had. I like the fact that they're going to get back to an identity of power football and running the football. I think it'll serve them well this season against Mountain West opponents they have on their schedule. And I really just think this is going to be a feisty bunch this year out of conference as well. So I think there is a path for Fresno State to rack up the Mountain West wins and have a shot to maybe slip in there and play presumed favorite Boise State in the Mountain West championship game. I'm not necessarily going to say that I think they're going to go in there and win it, but I think that's not completely inconceivable for this group to start strong with who they have on the conference slate, probably end the season with one or two conference losses, and then it could be that showdown at San Jose State at the end of the season on November 29th, which could determine which of those two teams gets there.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see this year unfold the way that it does. And you do like them in week zero catching 14 against KU.
I do. I think when you look at Kansas, they've been a great story in Big 12 football over the last several seasons, having that program emerge after 15 years of futility. But when you look at Kansas over the last, or specifically last year, there was just so many times where they were let down. I know they have an electric quarterback in Jalen Daniels who's coming back from the back injury. But overall, this team loses 38 seniors. Their top six receivers are gone. Their top running back is gone. They lose significant personnel along the offensive line. There's significant defensive losses at really all three levels of the defense, and they're bringing in new coordinators. I think there's just a lot of pressure on this group to try to get back to a bowl game, but I don't know. I don't see this being the hot start Kansas team that was full of experience and full of depth that we saw the last couple of years, presumably 2022 and 2023. And I just feel like this is just one of those seasons where maybe Kansas comes back to their norm, their mean, what they should be as a program, which is not necessarily a Big 12 power. So I think this group is probably going to fight and scratch and claw their way to 6-6. But we went under the Kansas win total. And in this week one slate, I think it's a really good matchup for Fresno State to go in there, muck this game up, possess the football, keep it a low-scoring game, run between the tackles, where Kansas last year at times was just so susceptible to giving up a ton of yards on the ground. And I don't know that they're going to improve with the front seven they have coming back this year. I will not be surprised at all if Fresno goes in there and gives them a real strong game. Something we've been accustomed to at times with Fresno State, going and playing power four opponents on the road and really giving them a feisty battle. I think this is one where Fresno State will be really in contention to keep this game close throughout.
At Step on a Duck 1, a must-follow in college football, in the betting world, Joshua Nunn, Action Network. Always love your insight, man. Thanks for jumping on.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Have a great day. We'll see you later.
Tons of content from Mountain West coaches coming up, and we'll start with the preseason favorite and a team that went to the college football playoff, Spencer Danielson, head coach of Boise State, coming up next.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
We reach day two of Mountain West Football Media Days hosted here at Circa. And with that, we have the good fortune of having a couple head coaches on the desk in studio with us. And we're starting this thing off with a bang. Head coach of the two-time defending Mountain West champion Boise State Broncos, Spencer Danielson, with us here. And as of yesterday, with the Mountain West media poll coming out, favored to three-peat. So that's got to be a nice feeling, coach.
No, I appreciate it, guys. We're fired up. Thank you, Jesus, for another year to be able to compete. And I do say this, we've been picked to win at 18 years in a row. So we got to go earn the right to go do it again.
So we've talked about this. This is now old hat, but it is kind of funny. You're sitting in the middle of a casino and you're a college football coach. Yeah. The dynamic of how this has changed and this relationship has become symbiotic now with Circa, but hanging out in Vegas, going to casinos for media days, got to be a little bit different as a football guy, right?
Yeah, very different. And Circa does a phenomenal job here. I mean, how they set it up for us, but yeah, it's a different deal now, man. We're pushing forward.
You mentioned right when you came in that even though this is like a long day for you, you still love it because you love talking about your team. Yeah. What makes this group special?
I think year in and year out, every year's a new year, every year's a new team. And especially in college football now more than ever with transfer portal and people leaving, graduating. So every year's a new team. But just seeing the group of guys this offseason, the work they put in, the love they have for each other, like we define love as action and sacrifice. Seeing our guys sacrifice for each other, how they connect with the freshmen, guys that are struggling. We had two of our players here yesterday, Jaden Virgin Morgan and Cage Casey, guys that have come as freshmen, got beat up as redshirts, and kept growing, kept being a part of our family. That's different. And I really want to focus on making sure our program transforms people's lives and isn't just about the transactional side of college football where I'm going to go play there. If it's not for me, I'm going to leave. Like, college football has become very transactional. I really believe we have a team that focuses on transformation, and that starts with the connection of our players.
All right, so speaking of change, one of the big changes, he is now about, what, southeast from here, a couple of minutes. Ashton Gentry is a Las Vegas Raider.
I've been trying to get him back, man. I think he's happy with the silver and black. So,
So I wanted to ask, you know, obviously walk us through what the backfield looks like now. And from what you ask of these guys, are you going to ask the same thing of them as you did from Gentry, who is a very big workhorse guy? How do you change that dynamic when when a player like that leaves a program?
For us, it's not so much replacing Ashton Gentry. It's we're a team. And when you lose the best football player in the country, you've got to have answers. And right now, we got a great group of guys in the running back room. I think Maddox Madsen coming back off the campaign he had, there's going to be a lot more critical moments where the ball is going to be in his hand just because of how he stepped up. But Sire Gaines is a young sophomore, really redshirt freshman who got hurt game three that I think could be one of the better running backs we've ever had at Boise State. Wired the right way. On Sunday, I'm driving home from a vacation with our family, and I FaceTime him, and he's out on the field sweating his tail off. I'm like, it's Sunday, bro. Like, give yourself a breather. But that's just who he is. Loves his teammate, works his tail off. Malik Sherrod's a transfer running back. Came in the spring, had a great spring. Breezy Dubar, Dylan Riley, two really good players that have been there. So we've got a good stable. I mean, running backs at Boise State, that's kind of like what we do and run the football. And so guys are going to step up. But it's a team game. We got to play really well on special teams, offense, and defense to get back to the championship.
Before we move too far off of Ashton Jeanty, I got to ask, especially coming here with the Raiders and knowing who's taking over in Vegas, that they love to run the football. Oh, yeah. What are the Raiders getting in Ashton, and what do you anticipate him bringing to the team?
Yeah, when he got drafted to the Raiders, I was blessed to be able to go out there and be with him in Green Bay when he was drafted. I just believe it's a perfect fit. I mean, their GM, Spytek, does a phenomenal job. He knows exactly what he's getting in Ashton. I believe he's going to get someone that impacts their culture even more than they think. Because he's a better person than he is even a football player. And I think he's one of the best football players in the world. I'm not even talking college football. I'm talking NFL, too. So they're going to get a guy that not only works his tail off in everything he does, he's going to push that culture forward for the Las Vegas Raiders. I believe he's going to be the offensive rookie of the year.
What should our expectations be for Madsen this year?
He's an elite competitor. Yeah. I mean, never too high, never too low. He's that guy that no matter what he's doing, he's going to try and kill you to win. Like, that's who he is. And he's been counted out his entire life. Now he's stepping into being the guy, right? Preseason player of the year. But he's got that hunter mentality where he's always on edge. There's something to prove. And this is his team now. I told him that in the offseason, like, go take the reins and let's go, brother. Like, let's go take off running. And he's done that. How he works, how he cares about his team, how he builds into people. I think he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks around.
I mean, I can say that too. I remember the Mountain West Championship game. There was quite a dime that guy threw.
Backcourt in the end zone with Trell Caples. One of the best throws I've ever seen in person.
I went to UNLV, so I remember it fondly.
You're cheering for us?
Yeah. With that, though, like, what is the next step in the evolution of Maddox Magsin for you?
Yeah. The biggest thing for me with Maddox is him stepping up in his leadership. He's got all the tools. He can make every throw. He's extremely consistent. I mean, we were one of the top offenses in the country in regards to takeaways and sacks, which are huge stats in regards to being efficient offensively. That's because of Maddox, right? He gets the ball out on time. He doesn't make bad decisions. He keeps on schedule. That's elite. And now there's things that, just like him growing in as a football player, as a quarterback, that he's going to do in his time. But just now it's no longer Ashton's team. It's no longer Ahmed Hossein's team or some of these players that have been here. It's your team now, man. But don't change who you are. You don't need to put a Superman cape on and, all right, listen to me, like Braveheart speech. Be you. Be you, but just know that your whole team respects you and you've earned that right. And I believe he's going to, like I said, be one of the better quarterbacks around. He can make the throws. He can make the throws in the critical moments. He makes great decisions. He's never a guy that goes out on a game day, especially a quarterback, where the pressure starts getting to him, he starts freaking out. He's always right here. And that keeps our team focused and level-headed, even in the biggest moments.
All right, so big guys, we don't really talk about them a lot. What's this offensive look like, this offensive line now look like for you here?
Yeah, we have four returning starters on offensive line. Cage Casey was down here yesterday. And just to speak about him, I mean, a young man that came to us as a freshman, was probably 6'5", maybe, he says 275. I'd say probably more like 260. And now he's, you know, 6'6", 315. We got, like I said, the four returning starters we got. That's the mentality of our teams, our O and D line. I mean, if you're not good up front, you're not going to win a championship, period, end of story. And that's what we believe we develop really well are the trenches, our O&D line. Cage Casey, Mason Randolph, Roger Carrion are three of our pillars of our offensive line. Flipping the defensive line, Jaden Virgin Morgan, 10.5 sacks. And even more impressive, if you watch games, are the amount of pursuit plays he has because he's got that relentless mentality. Braxton Feely. Max Steege is stepping into a role because of Ahmed Hossein leaving in a major way. So we believe in our fronts. I mean, I believe in our skill players too, but to win championship games, you have to run the football and you have to stop the run. Period. End of story.
Head coach of the Boise State Broncos, Spencer Danielson, joining us here in studio at Circa Resort and Casino as Mountain West Media Days rolls on. Cage, by the way, I heard him on the desk say about you and your culture, that guy asked me to jump off a cliff, I would do it just because I know he wants nothing but the best for me, so it wouldn't be about outcome. And I think that says a lot about you and what you're trying to shape at Boise State. You mentioned expectations earlier. How much do you at Boise State like enjoy that? Because year after year, you guys have those every year. And then last season, you go to the first time we have that 12-team college football playoff. You're there. Does that make you guys better having that threshold that you know when you show up on another team's schedule that you're getting the other team's best because of what you built?
Absolutely. I mean, that's Boise State. We talk about it all the time. We could watch an opponent, and maybe they are not playing well or there's not a lot of fans there. That won't be the same team we show up with. Guys get automatically healthy when they play Boise State. The fans show up when they play Boise State. We get everybody's best. And that's the You got to know that when you come to work at Boise State or play. That's why, I mean, Boise State, the success we have, this is built on years and years of coaches and players that had that blue-collar mentality when they were counted out and proved everybody wrong. And so that's what it is. You got to embrace it. We were 27 consecutive years of winning seasons, lead the country in that stat. So just going to a bowl game for Bronco Nation, that ain't good enough. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like that, I told you, don't come here. Don't work here. That's the expectation of Boise State, is every year you're on the cutting edge to win a championship, to go to the college football playoff. And as a competitor, I love it. Absolutely love it. Wouldn't want it any other way.
How much does that help in this day and age, keeping guys around, too?
Absolutely. Where every year you feel like we've got an opportunity to do something great. No different last season, no different this year. And that's my push to our team this year. That's why this summer, we called this summer the edge. That's something to prove, to where everyone talks about last season. It's like, no, this is our season right now. Like, we're on that edge. You have something to prove. I have something to prove. You can't start halfway up the mountain, man. You got to start at the bottom and take one step at a time to achieve anything you want in football, anything you want in life. And that's really where we're at right now.
That's exciting. It seems like Boise State has been on the top of the league for a while, and you have plans to be there yet again. We appreciate you so much. What else do you have going on? Are we your last media stop, or how many more hours of this are upcoming?
I've got a great team that's pushing me around a lot right now, so I'm sure we're not done. You know, but it's been, guys, I appreciate your guys' time, and this has been awesome.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Steve Cofield joins us. Las Vegas legend. The one and only
Is
Steve
that right?
Cofield. Yeah.
Human starts laughing.
Cofield and Company. You can catch it weekdays here in Vegas on ESPN Las Vegas from 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific time. I walked upstairs during media days. I said, hey, Steve, you want to come on the show today? We got to talk some media days. Because, look, we've had actually really good conversations, Matt, with the coaches that have come in. But, you know, it's a lot of coach speak. We had a couple players in. You know, they're guarded. So we got to actually ask, what the hell is going on in the Mountain West?
Guy who's a straight shooter.
Yeah.
Right.
And someone who knows the UNLV program really well. I'll leave the UNLV question to Matt, because I got to ask this question, Steve, and I'm going to throw it your way. If you had Boise State or the field to make the college football playoff from the G5, what would you take?
What are the numbers? Do you have them set? I'll say the field regardless.
I mean,
unless it's like minus 300 for the field.
Yeah, Boise's plus 190, so I guess the field would be favored, right? So, so we'll say, what is that, minus 210 plus 190?
I'll take the field.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Boise's going to come back, and I don't think massively to the pack in the Mountain West, but I think games are going to be harder now. There's a lot of things that when you break down these conferences, so much of the preseason predictions are just kind of credit is given to the team that's been dominant. I don't think people are factoring in how big Ashton Gentry was for them. And it's not just the 2,600 yards in rushing. It's like everything else he does that screws up a defense, right? First team All Mountain West quarterback going into the season is Maddox Mattson. I think he's good, but I also think he benefited massively, so do the tight ends, from all the extra attention you have to put on Ashton Gentry. And the biggest thing with Gentry was, and most running backs are good at breaking tackles, he was ridiculous. Like, you had to have three or four guys to the ball because his ability to shed was nuts. And they had so many open receivers, so many jailbreaks with a tight end, I think, because so much attention was paid to Gentry. Their running game, I think, will be good, but it's not going to be Gentry good, and defenses don't have to scheme the way they did against Gentry.
All right, two part question here. How do you rank the top four teams in the Mountain West right now?
I thought the way the media laid it out was pretty good. I'll go Boise one, San Jose State two, Colorado State three, UNLV four. Mm-hmm. I think UNLV has, did I mention one team twice?
No.
UNLV, I think, has the potential to win the conference, but I got to see more. And I want people to remember, you know, especially around the country, if you didn't pay attention, Barry Odom's a really good coach. And Barry Odom was really good in game situations. I think Dan Mullen's really good, but I don't know all his players yet. And UNLV was really good in close games. And there were a lot of scores the last couple of years that turned out to be like 11-point, 14-point victories because they came on in the fourth quarter. They were a great second-half adjustment staff.
That's the second part of my question, all right? Dan Mullen, great guy. When you talk to him, you like him. He's, you know, hyping up a UNLV program that won 20 games the past 2 years. Brought it back to the map. But that Barry Odom team is gone. Almost all those players are gone. Coaching staff's gone. You got a new coaching staff. You probably got 60 new players on this team. Now, a lot of these guys are really talented recruits out of high school. I think this team's being overvalued right now. It's going to be hard to put this puzzle together in a short amount of time. Win total's 8.5. Schedule's not that easy. Is UNLV being a little bit overhyped? Are expectations a little bit too high? Because that was Barry Odom, and this is going to be different.
They might be a little overhyped.
How about the quarterback play, too? You got to have questions about that, don't you?
Yeah. I think Anthony Calandria, the transfer from Virginia, is going to be good, but he's going to make mistakes. He plays with kind of an edge, big trash talker, very talented. I think Orji will be in the mix. But their quarterback play last year, Haj Malik Williams, and he faded a little bit at the end, but he was very good, and he was very dangerous with the feet. Keep in mind, Barry Odom walked in, and Ricky White was ready to be an All-American type player. That was a big deal. He brought in Jackson Woodard, who was awesome on defense. The linebacker who's going to take the lead now is Marcel McDuffie, who's actually a Marcus Arroyo guy with his third coaching staff now. He's good. But, you know, the other thing, how about we factor in this? Brennan Marion, I don't know if he's going to be a good head coach. He can recruit, and he can drive money. We'll see what he does at Sac State. Freaking awesome recruiter and really good game day schemer. Totally different offense now. We'll see what Corey Dennis has as the OC. And I'll give you one that I'm a little worried about. I got to see the kind of defense that they're going to play under Paul Gunther. I think they had to retool the D a little bit. They were designed to play 3-3-5. I don't think they're going to play that as much. And, you know, Gunther hasn't been in college since basically coaching back at Ursinus, you know, 30 years ago. Good DC, but does it work? Does it work? Yeah, right. Does it work year one in college football? They had a good coaching staff. That's my whole point here. I think these guys are good, but are they like next level good?
We're talking to Steve Cofield, who joins us here in studio, radio host for ESPN Las Vegas, also does sidelines for UNLV football as well as basketball. His program, Cofield & Company. We know some of that company from time to time.
I think you guys know most of the company. they're also all legends.
Yeah. JVT, a guy who never returns my text messages, Adam Hill.
What?
He was up there today.
Longtime partners. What's going on, Matt? Should I stir the pot here? What is going on here? Tim.
No. Adam Hill never responded. Oh, JVT responded.
I thought JVT
No, JVT.
Adam Hill does not respond to anyone.
Yeah, we're good.
He's on his own clock.
We're good on that. You mentioned San Jose State being number two. And, you know, yesterday we were talking to Brad Powers. We had Walker E. get in. We had Ken in today. And I looked at the schedule, Steve, and it's no UNLV, no Boise, no Colorado State, Air Force at home, Hawaii at home. And I'm like, this team with a great coach has got the schedule. I wouldn't say walk. They're not that talented, but they've got the schedule, they've got the coaching staff, and I think they've got a pretty decent, talented roster to be in the conference championship game.
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence in Coach Ken, and in talking to him today, I liked his grip on reality. San Jose State doesn't have the funding of other teams. The top team is the CSU. UNLV is coming up now and Boise State. So they kind of realize who they are. So that means personnel is really important and mining personnel is really important. So I think they did a really good job in recovering last year from a mass exodus in the portal. He's just a good coach, good coaching staff. And Egitt, I think, has a chance to be elite. He's got to cut out some of the mistakes. They also have to run the ball better. So, and they, he was telling me today that that game last year against UNLV was in this crazy rainstorm sideways, and once they couldn't throw the ball, they were kind of cooked late. So I think they'll be a better power team. And that schedule, I mean, how much does that schedule mean? That's massive.
Huge.
All right, so Steve Cofield with us, ESPN Radio Las Vegas. I don't know if you've analyzed the win totals for all the teams. Any teams you really like or don't like or win totals that you would call best bets?
Do you have the number in front of you for San Diego State?
4.5.
Okay. I'm not sure the San Diego State's going to take a big leap forward. I thought their quarterback last year was good. I didn't think he was Wisconsin good.
Right.
And is Sean Lewis going to be able to recruit to that school?
What is Wisconsin good, by the way? They got Billy Edwards Jr. as
their
starter.
I was really surprised O'Neal went to Wisconsin. He wasn't that good as a freshman at San Diego State when he transferred to Wisconsin. What? He can't be a starter for the Badgers.
4.5 juiced over. Yeah, so -140 over.
That's the smallest number we've seen for a San Diego State win total in a long time.
I'm still not confident they're going to go over. A couple issues. I thought their defense, which has been – that's been the program, right? They could play real close to the vest football, great rushing game. I don't think their defense was big enough last year. I don't think they've added enough size. They want to play speed on defense. They were small and slow. So I don't think they're that good that way. I'm not sure that Sean Lewis can recruit to that level. He's a good coach, but can he recruit to that level? And I'll give you the other thing. They have no home field advantage now. Their fans stink. Now, you know, the hometown Rebel fans are getting a little bit better, but that, you know, Allegiant looks cavernous when you only have 30,000 or 25,000 in there. San Diego State's got a brand new stadium, and every time I've been down there or you watch it on TV, there's no one there. So what happened to this raucous atmosphere?
Yeah. Oh, in fact, I love the stadium, but I went to a couple games here last year. And it was like 10 or 12,000 fans, maybe 15,000 fans.
Well, they made the mistake of they outpriced the audience. They made the tickets outrageous, and it's like San Diego cares about sports. They'll pay for the basketball team, but they're not going to pay $90, $100, $125 for San Diego State football.
You're not saying San Diego State under 4.5 is the best bet, though, right? That's a low number.
I know it's a low number.
Well, at Washington State, home to Cal, at Northern Illinois is their non-con. They have an FCS team in there. They get Colorado State at home. They go to Nevada. They go to Fresno State, host Wyoming. They go to the island, and then they wrap up the season. Boise, San Jose State, both at home, and then they play New Mexico. So they don't play UNLV, but other than that, they play all the big boys.
A half's a pretty good number. I mean, it looks like either 4 or 5 wins, right?
Yeah, I'm not a lover of going unders in general, but I'll say, what's the Nevada number?
That one I don't have memorized.
Rock bottom.
I will.
3. They were 3-10 a year.
3.5.
So I'll go over on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They lost 6 games last year by 1 score. So they play hard. Choate's good coach. He's much better than the previous coach. There's a tradition there. They're starting to get players. He's building it the right way. It's not just a quick fix. So I'd go over on their number.
You know who's impressive? Tim and I had him in studio tonight. Not sure if you got a chance to talk to him. You probably did. Matt Entz, the new coach of Fresno. If you sit down and talk to him, very impressive guy. He's going to win.
I didn't get a chance to talk to him. There's 2 FCS coaches now who are new in the league. We got to talk to Jason Eck, who was at Idaho. Did a pretty good job there. I mean, Entz is... his pedigree is ridiculous.
Won national titles at North Dakota State.
I mean, how insane was that? It just shows the haves and the have-nots. That he left the head coach job at North Dakota State to go be
USC's
linebacker coach, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think Fresno nailed it. Fresno, outside of gigantic bucks, Fresno has everything in place, and that's why they've been so good. They have such a good tradition. So, yeah, impressive guy. I would expect a big bounce back from them.
Steve Cofield, Cofield & Company, weekdays on ESPN Las Vegas. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Day 2 of Mountain West Football Media Days being hosted here. Yesterday, when the Mountain West announced its predicted order of finish, the UNLV Rebels were picked by the media 2nd, so very high expectations for the Rebels in year 1 for new head coach Dan Mullen, who we're very fortunate to be joined with on set today. What's going on, buddy?
No, not much. So our odds are pretty... You're saying the odds are stacked in our favor.
Pretty good.
To get that title.
Yes.
It's very rare. I mean, for a long time, as we've discussed, I think it was 2 years ago at Mount West Media Day, and Wallington can correct me over here, but there was a rogue voter who voted UNLV first in the media poll. And it was chaos. People wanted to know who voted for him, what happened. But, you know, 2 years later, the expectations are there.
It is. I think, you know, Barry Odom did a really good job building the program up over the last couple of years. And as you said, the standard expectations. I've always felt UNLV is somewhat of a sleeping giant in the college football world. You're in the entertainment and now sports capital of the world that has so much to offer. The city's growing so much. And now they have the opportunity to buy into big-time college football. Yeah. And if we can bring big-time college football here to Vegas, I see the city jumping on that bandwagon in a hurry, and you put that whole city behind us and all the UNLV fans around the country. I think we have a product that can be extreme, special, and a team that can go compete for and win championships, hopefully Mountain West and even beyond, and go compete on the national stage.
Yeah, and I think that you put it really well. Like, this is a team that people have wanted to root for a long time, and now there's this feeling of excitement that's around the program. And for you in particular, in year one, like the pedigree that you have of the programs you've coached in the past and some of the players that you've brought in, how excited are you about this group this year?
I'm thrilled. Now, the hard part, I don't know the league. You know, I haven't been in the league in a long, long time. But I love the energy our guys bring. You know, I mean, you go into meeting room. I want to see guys, the effort we play with, the energy they show up with every day, every time you come on the field. You know, I really am excited about that group. I think we have some very talented players. Guys are learning the offensive and defensive system. We got, you know, training camp. We report to camp next Wednesday is our first practice. And, you know, I want to see that growth in that next step. I'm excited about the energy, excited about the talent. The tough part is I don't know how good everybody else is in the league. Yeah. So that's, you know, it, with not having been in the league in so long, how do we stack up against other teams? Hopefully we stack up really well. We have some success and have that opportunity to go compete for championship.
You got to relearn the league in a year, too. That's the tough part, huh?
Yeah, it's going to change up. Well, there's some people staying, yeah, some going. Sure. It's college football. Who knows what's, you know, I mean, who knows what's going on? By next week, we might be in a, right?
Yeah,
we might change.
Still
got a couple weeks right now. You guys are going to, you know, play a new schedule.
So you guys do, the roster is, there's a lot of roster turnover. A lot of the key role players from last year obviously move on to different different stops. Completely rebuilding a roster, but retooling this roster that lost so much while also implementing your style, looking for your guys. What is this process like over the offseason for you?
You know, I mean, it's been pretty good, but a lot of the guys came because of the style that we play. Yeah. You know, and you look, we're able to bring in, you know, you start at the quarterback position, want to bring in quarterbacks, and I have a great background of developing quarterbacks. You're bringing guys in that really want to be, you know, be coached, be developed at the quarterback position. You know, Jet Thomas comes back, a running back, is a special player, you know, for us, the leading rusher, returning rusher for the Mountain West Conference. Brought in a bunch of talent out at wide receiver to be able to spread the field. You know, so on the offensive side of the ball, we have a good mix of returning guys and new guys on the defensive side of the ball. Had to revamp the entire secondary. But, you know, that's the new college football world. You know, I think you know, before people were like, okay, well, hey, year two, you know, you take over a program and then, you know, in year two to three, it really becomes that coach's program. That's now, I mean, it's your team day one, you know, I mean, because of the turnover, because of transfer portal, because of what happened. So I'm excited. I thought we've brought in some pretty good talent into this roster. And I think the coaches and the players and the leaders within the team have done a good job of bringing the team together in a short period of time.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, how would you describe your approach to when you have all of these players that are coming in that aren't familiar with each other, that are in a new place, and getting them to buy in and be a cohesive unit and team together?
Well, that it's unique, right? Because you had a group that were like, hey, we were on the team last year. You're bringing new guys in that they don't know. Well, then the new guys don't know each other. Some of them do, some of them don't. And it's a new coaching staff. We did a lot with different team activities, a lot of different things of splitting guys into different groups. You know, we did a lot with our off-season teams. And the great thing about being in Las Vegas, there's a lot to do.
Sure.
Right? You know, it's like, hey, you know, I mean, the winning team this week, you know, the first place team in our points this week, you know, they're going sitting ringside at UFC. And then next week they're going to Michael Jackson One. And then they're going to this show, and then they're eating at this restaurant. You know, you go to some small SEC towns, like, hey, first place team, where are you going? Japanese steakhouse.
Yeah.
Okay, first place team next week, where are you going? The Japanese steakhouse. Like, hey, how about next week? The Japanese. But where'd you guys go? Like, did you do a team outing last night? Yeah, where? At the Japanese steakhouse.
You got to know the name of the steakhouse. Right?
Yeah. You know, and there's so much going on. So I think that certainly helped. And when we do that, we break up the offseason teams. You make sure, hey, the quarterbacks are in meetings, so they're going to know each other. Okay. And then the quarterbacks are going to get to know the receivers because they throw with each other. And like, but how do you take how does our quarterback become close with our backup outside backer? And so if you put guys on accountability teams together, that they're all working together, having to do a lot of different activities together, and you split them up and do different groups and organizations that way, you really get everybody on the team to network close together and get to know everybody else on the team.
So you've spent a little bit of time on the sideline. Obviously, you guys know each other from working in media.
You're slumming it. Yeah. You were slumming it with us in the ESPN world, and now you're back.
Well, I'm curious.
That was a lot.
You're pretty good at this. It's like you've done this before.
Yeah, I look a little comfortable sitting behind the desk.
You know how to talk into the mic? That works, too. Well, I was just curious, like, in your time off, obviously, doing media, how much did you change, alter, maybe working on things that you wanted to implement when you got back into coaching? What was that like for you?
It was interesting because, you know, a leper's not going to change their spots. I still who I am. I'm going to run the program. We're going to develop players. The standard of how we run the program is going to be always the same. I think being away helped over the last 3 years with the changes of the transfer portal with NIL, with that combination of the two, to see it from afar. I don't know. And I think you've talked to a lot of coaches over the last 3 years. They're unhappy. Yeah. And, you know, and because it kept changing all the time. And it's like, oh, I came back in and was able to get like a 30,000 foot view of it, talk to the different coaches, see things. I came back in accepting the new way that things are done, right? Mm-hmm. You know, accepting that you know, you're not looking 3 years, 4 years down the road, like, hey, boy, this we got our freshman, like, wait till you see our freshman sophomore class. Like, we might not be great this year, we'll be pretty good next year, but we'll be special 3 years from now. Heck, those guys will all be gone in today's world. You don't know where any of them will be. That's the old world. In today's world, it's, hey, you're kind of looking into 1 to 2 year windows. You're still at your base of your program. You still have to build a base of a program out of recruiting and recruiting high school players to build a foundation of your program. But you're more looking into 1 to 2 year windows of the program instead of 4 to 5 year windows of the program. And, you know, you had to come in to accept the fact that, hey, you know, you could recruit a kid, coach a kid, invest in a kid, develop a kid. He's going to walk in and say, hey, coach, I'm out. I'm hitting the transfer portal. And, you know, my deal with it, like, why? Okay, well, I hope you have a good reasoning because I want to help you. You know, if you don't want to be here, that's great. And by the time they're out the door, you're yelling at the GM. I mean, you just grab the phone. Hey, we need another linebacker. The kid's like, what? Yeah, we need a linebacker. You have to get some linebackers in here tomorrow. And, you know, it's not a personal deal. And I think, you know, in the old days, coaches, it was that personal investment in every player. Not that you don't have that investment in the kids anymore, but it is, you have to expect that, hey, this player, if he might have a good reason to go somewhere else, and there's no problem with it.
So with all that in mind, why did this feel like the right time and the right place for you to come back into this world?
Yeah, that's interesting, right? You sound like my wife on that question, too. No, no. I get that. I saw all this. She's like in 3 time zones away in Las Vegas. And
don't get her mad at me for bringing it up again.
TV was like, wasn't TV okay? She's a TV person. It had to, over the last couple of years, I've gotten calls. None of them really excited me. It was a lot about timing. I love my time at ESPN. I love, you know, I mean, the people, you know, a great family. You get to work with great people. You get to network with great people. I really enjoyed all of it. And, you know, it was probably October. I thought, you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll consider. If the right, you know, the last couple of years, just nothing felt right. If the right situation presents itself, let's consider it. You know, looking with my, you know, talking to the family. But it had to be the right situation. So I got calls. I'm just like, just didn't feel right. And if you would ask me 3 years ago, like, hey, would you be the head coach of UNLV? I said that would never happen. It wouldn't have computed to me. But then, you know, fortunately, I've been coming out to Las Vegas. Yes. You know, somehow like John Cecenti down at Southern Highlands. I was his member guest down at Southern Highlands the last 3 years. Huh? Yeah. But he got me out here. So I got to get to know the city outside the strip. And I had to have everything, had to have the facilities, had to be in place. I didn't want to start from scratch. The ability to win a championship was here, and it had to be a place I wanted to live with my family. Check, check, check. And instead of trying to talk myself into a job, Vegas, I was trying to think of why shouldn't I take the job, and I couldn't find a reason.
Well, and I can know that we can speak for a lot of Vegas locals that were very excited that you did. Yep. And can't wait to see what the Rebels do.
Am I local?
Yeah. There you go.
I'm local.
He was hitting me with cross streets earlier. He's ready to go. Dan Mullen, head coach of the UNLV Rebels.
VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We keep it rolling here on VSiN Primetime, live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. And it has been a fun week, as it always is, when the Mountain West comes to town. Coaches, players stopping by. Yesterday, we had the starting quarterback for San Jose State, Walker Egan, come in studio, and his head coach joins us right now, Ken Niumatalolo, year number 2 coach. And I asked this question to Walker yesterday, and I'm curious your answer. He's the guy coming in this year. Last year you had a competition. Last year you had a lot of uncertainty, obviously, as you took the program over. There was a lot of transition with the roster. How different has Walker been this offseason compared to last?
I mean, it's not even comparable. I mean, last year he was battling for a spot. Like you said, a lot of uncertainty and a lot of different things. We didn't make that decision until the week of the game, and it wasn't Walker. We went with Emmett Brown, and Walker came in later on in the season. And what he's done since he started playing to the bowl game, it was great. But I've been really excited to see after that. From the bowl game until now, the 7 months, his leadership, he's taken the reins. You know, he recognized this is his team. And football is not a very complicated game. Everything starts with the quarterback. And it's a totally different year because we know exactly who our leader is. We know exactly who our quarterback is. He's a year into Coach Stutz's offense. So his familiarity with what we're doing is totally different. And, yeah, it's not even close to where it was last year.
Known as a running coach, right? The ground game is your trademark. Now, last year, you guys threw it really effectively. Nick Nash was number two in college football in receiving yards. Walker Egitt put up big numbers as a quarterback. He was in here with us yesterday. He said, even though Nash is gone, I was really surprised he went undrafted, by the way, but he's with the Atlanta Falcons. Even though he's gone, he said, we're going to be fine. We've got a bunch of great receivers who are ready to step in. What's the passing attack going to look like? What's your offense going to look like in general?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I mean, not too great, but Nick was actually, he led the country in receiving yards. You know what I mean? And so,
if you include the bowl game, it was Harold Fannin. Yeah. Right there.
He didn't play in the bowl game.
I know.
So I'll just say the games he played, he led the country in right. receiving yards. And so, tremendous player. He's with Atlanta right now. Nick not only did a great job, but Justin Lockhart, the ex, did a great job. He had almost 1,000 yards. Both of those guys are in camps. And so replacing those guys is going to be tough, but we knew that going into it. And we signed Leland Smith. For Purdue, Danny Scudero from Sacramento State. The guy who played in the bowl game in place of Nick in the bowl game was Matt Coleman. He caught 100 yards worth of ball. So maybe you could add those yards to Nick's yards and he would have won. So add those yards because Matt had a great game. Cooper Hoke came back, but also Malachi Riley from Arizona, Jahari Johnson, and Kyrie Scholes. We're going to miss those two guys, but probably from top to bottom, we're probably deeper. And watching those guys run in the off season, I like who we have. So it's exciting.
You know, the offense, spread and tread, offensive coordinators Craig Stutzman, what can people expect when they turn on this San Jose State offense? You just rattled off the receivers. We talked about Walker. So is it, you know, similar to what – you know, June Jones ran back in the day at Hawaii. Is that what you're trying to mimic? Is it a little bit of a change? What is this? How would you define this offense this year?
Yeah, the passing game, a lot of principles are from June Jones. It's run and shoot base. But the run game is all Coach Stutzman. He's evolved offense. So that's where it looks different. Where the passing game, a lot of principles are from June Jones, Constant Miles Davis. Craig, you know, played at St. Louis where Marcus Mariota, Tua Tagovailoa from, and all those guys are run-and-shoot guys. But he's added on to that. And so his run game stuff are different stuff. But four of the five O-linemen that are going to play played last year. So we feel good about that. Our tight ends are back. So we feel good about that. Three of our running backs that played last year are all back, having Walker back. So offensively, we're going to have a ton of guys back, and defensively, we have a ton of guys back. Three of our defensive linemen played last year. Our two starting outside linebackers are back. Two of our top three inside linebackers are back. One safety is back. The position we had to fill is corners, but we went out and signed Caleb Presley from Washington, Malachi Crawford from USC. We got Runye Norton. And so we like what we have. You know, we signed a kicker from USC. That was another spot we had to fill. Last year at this time, it was a little bit of chaos. But we're in place now. And so you still got to win on the field, but I like our team.
All right, you've been in college football a long time, player, coach. You've seen things change dramatically here in the last few years with the NIL and how the budgets have become like unrestricted free agency in college football with no salary cap. How do you compete at San Jose State against the Boise States, Ohio States, Texas on your schedule in week 2? How can you, I guess you got to scout and develop better and coach them up, but how do you compete at San Jose with the bigger budget schools like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Boise would say the same thing. Their budget doesn't look like Ohio State's budget. I mean, those are different budgets. You just recognize who you are. You recruit to your school. We recruit to Silicon Valley, the job opportunities that you have being in the tech, you know, capital of the world. We feel like our university is a place that, you know, it's a great degree. But we just try to recruit to who we are. Like we had all of those wide receivers that I talked about that we signed, they recognize that we don't have a ton of money, like you said, like other schools, but they recognize you have an opportunity to come here and catch the football and be in a prolific offense. Defensively, guys love the culture of what we do, so we try to recruit to that. We just recognize who we are. We don't go to high-end stores because we can't shop in there. We just kind of go to the department stores that we can have the budget for. We just kind of go. There's no sense complaining for us because it is what it is, and we just try to battle the best we can.
Kenny Amatalolo is the head coach of San Jose State, year number two for Coach Ken at San Jose State. You open up Friday night, August 29th on FS1 against Central Michigan, and then you play a school from Texas. I don't know. They have a pretty high-profile game in week number one, too. But I'm curious, Coach, when you think back to your time at the Naval Academy, I think you were there over two decades, so much success. It's just a completely different world, and Matt talked about the running game. You had to run the triple option just based off of your personnel. Did Navy prepare you for this job? What are some things you took from that, and what have you had to adapt to coaching at a civilian school as opposed to the Naval Academy?
Yeah, great question. I think bringing people together and leading people is always the same.
Yeah.
I mean, football is, to me, is the ultimate team sport. I mean, you got 11 guys doing their job at a time, and you got 22 on offense, defense, you got your special teams, but you have this big roster of, you know, 100 or so guys trying to accomplish one job. So I think some of those things you kind of take. I took, prior to that, all of my experience of being a player and a coach to be a head coach. And some of the things that I learned at the Naval Academy is bringing the team together. They're the same principles used here. From Hawaii, I believe in family. So we talked about building an Ohana, a unit. I think one of the things that helped us last year in the chaos of last year is finding a way to assimilate that group. Because from the previous year, it was 50 new guys on the team.
Right.
So I think some of the things I took from the Naval Academy is learning how to build a team. And we did that there. And some of the things you didn't know is the portal, revenue sharing, NIL. But I haven't really worried about that because I don't think anybody knows that. I mean, we're all figuring that out. Yeah, nobody right. knows the answer for that. As you said, the budgets are different. But we recognize here's our budget. And I don't really, again, worry about shopping in these different stores. Just worry what we have. Try to figure out the NIL and the portal. And, you know, the best I can, and revenue sharing the best we can, like everybody else is. And I think all of us are trying to figure that out right now ourselves. I mean, themselves.
Tim mentioned you got a game at Texas on September 6th, week two. Longhorns are going to be off that trip to Ohio State. Did you schedule that, or was that scheduled before you got there?
Yeah, that was that was definitely before I got there.
That's what I thought.
When I saw that, like, oh, who scheduled that game? You know, but we're probably going to have to do those type of games. It's kind of like you're talking about budgets.
I mean, game,
yeah,
right?
we're going to have to do that. It's, you know, to survive, and, you know, and so we'll prepare the best we can for that. But we're also San Jose State. We can't overlook Central Michigan.
Sure.
It's not like we're Alabama or something that we got better players. I mean, we got to make sure that we're ready for Central Michigan, but that's definitely going to be a tall order going to Austin.
Also, November 1st, I'll just say, your alma mater coming to your house. I saw a picture of you and Timmy Chang, Coach Chang. That should be a fun one there, Hawaii versus San Jose State.
Yeah, we got a lot of Hawaii ties on our team, too. I mean, Craig Stutzman, Billy Stutzman, John Estes. We got three coaches on our staff that are four of us, including myself, that are Rainbow Warriors. So we got some players on our team that are from Hawaii. You know, we're excited to play them. Timmy's done a really good job, and, you know, that's going to be a tough game. Because, you know, the stuff that he's done at their program. But that will be exciting.
No doubt about it. Hey, Coach, always appreciate it. Have you enjoyed Circa? We only got a couple seconds. Do you enjoy being back here?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
People have been awesome here. It's a great venue for the Mountain West, and we're appreciative of everybody here.
Safe travels back. I know you're headed back to the island for a little bit. Best of luck this season, Coach.
Thanks, Tim. Thank you, guys.
There he is. Kenny Amatalolo, the head coach of San Jose State. Open up the season Friday, August 29th on FS1 against the Chips of Central Michigan.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
We just had Coach Kenny Amatalolo from San Jose State, and now the new head coach of Fresno State, Matt Entz, joins us here in studio. Coach, appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me today.
Now, I'm curious, you were the head coach of North Dakota State, led that program, that story program, to multiple national championships. You left last year to go join Lincoln Riley's staff at USC. What jumped out to you about Fresno that led to you kind of gravitating to try to grab this job?
Yeah, that's been a common question today. You know, when I was at SC, I wasn't in a rush to be a head football coach. I took that opportunity to grow and continue to develop as a coach myself. And again, very appreciative to Coach Riley, Jen Cohen, the AD, defensive staff I worked with was tremendous. But, you know, years ago, I remember Pat Hill being the head football coach at Fresno and the energy, the checkerboard end zones.
The V?
Yep, the V, the packed house, the 40-plus thousand fans at a home game. And I knew football was important there. They've had a history of great players, NFL caliber players. Yeah, you're in a location that you can recruit kind of the whole state of California. And the city of Fresno, the area, the Central Valley resonated with me just because of the makeup of the people, kind of a blue collar, hardworking, sweat equity type of people. And I felt like I could recruit my own style of people there. And, you know, it checked a lot of boxes for me and my family and my wife. And so we started to inquire a little bit about the opportunity at Fresno, because I think there's a huge ceiling right now.
Sure.
You know, I know 6-7 last year wasn't what they want to be, and there's a standard of football there. There's a history. There's a tradition. They want winners, and you should always be in that conversation, I think, at Fresno State.
All right, you talked about the history of great players. You have a lot of great quarterbacks come through that program, too. What's your quarterback situation?
Well, we are, you know, in a little bit of a flux right now, trying to figure out who that quarterback is. We brought in two young men. We brought E.J. Warner, Kurt Warner's son. He came to us in January, does an outstanding job starting to really kind of, you know, get his feet on the ground, understand what we're doing offensively. And then, of course, Carson Conklin, Jaden Mandel, you know, both, you know, outstanding quarterbacks in their own right, have ability. You know, Carson was the was a Jerry Rice Award finalist for Sacramento State and FCS level, and Jaden's been with us for a couple years now. So we see it as kind of a three-headed, you know, battle going into fall camp, which we start Wednesday due to our Week Zero game. Yeah. So we are right around the corner from go time.
Coach Matt Entz, year number one for Fresno State, most recently at USC, won and led the Bison to multiple national championships in North Dakota State. You mentioned style. Do you have a style of quarterback? Because you think, you know, you had mentioned Cam Miller, who I believe you recruited. He's now at the Raiders, tremendous athlete. Trey Lance, obviously, was your quarterback at North Dakota State. Do you like athletic quarterbacks, or do you just adapt to what you have at the, on the roster?
Well, we're going to have to adapt to a certain extent to what we have and what they're capable of handling from a mental standpoint. But, of course, being a defensive guy throughout most of my career, I know the concerns and the issues when you have an athletic quarterback back there that can extend plays, you can move the pocket with, and also have some diagram plus one run game in the collegiate level, all of a sudden creates a whole new, you know, whole new set of problems that, you know, you're going to stay up late at night trying to, how are we handling all these things from under center to in the gun to, you know, moving pocket, play action, quick game. You know, we want to do as much as we can so we can threaten and make people have to defend the entire field. But I hope you can see some of that with all the guys we have in camp right now. They all provide, you know, some of those skill set and some of those traits that we're looking for.
You know, when I read last year that you were going to USC, I looked at Lincoln Riley's staff. I said, man, that's a great coaching staff to put together. You guys lost a lot of close games.
We did.
The win-loss record should have been better than it was. What's going on at USC right now? Because I keep hearing Lincoln Riley's on the hot seat, which I think is absurd.
Right. Well, I think there's a ton of, you know, Lincoln does an outstanding job, you know, on the offensive side. And I can't say enough about guys like Danton Lynn, Doug Belk, Sean Nua, Eric Henderson on that defensive side of the ball. Those guys were unbelievable. I mean, the knowledge that they had about the game and the different levels that they've all competed at. But, you know, men of integrity, but also championship caliber. It was fun every day to show up and go to work at USC. But somewhere along the way, the 45-minute to hour drive that I had into work and at home every night is when all of a sudden I started to kind of formulate, Hey, if I ever had a chance.
You didn't have that in Fargo?
No, I didn't. I didn't. And I don't have it in Fresno either. But I started to formulate, like, hey, if I ever had a chance to do it again, you know, if I was ever in the main chair and as a head coach, what would it look like? What would I bring with me? What are the things that I've learned in my experience at USC that I would take? Or what would be the changes, you know, to a program? And so that's where, like I said, I wasn't really in a race to be a head coach again, but it was kind of a combination and kind of a, you know, just perfect timing.
When you look at your schedule this year, yeah, to open up in week zero, you mentioned camp starts Wednesday.
Yeah.
We had Coach Chang in studio yesterday, similar situation. They open up at Stanford. Is it I guess you'll find out, but is it a blessing or is it a curse to play in week zero?
Well, I'm going to take it as a positive this year. Because it's going to truly give us almost a month of fall camp. So it's just our players, our staff, our support personnel, myself, to just football for 1 month. No classes, no outside, you know, distractions.
Is the game before classes start?
No, it's we're in class for 3 days and then we go. Yeah. So minimal, you know, class conflict with what we have going on. But it does also provide a bye week every month of the season.
Sure.
We have a bye week in September, one in October, one in November, more than I've ever experienced before. But going into my first year, I see these bye weeks as unbelievable opportunity to continue to develop the youth in our program. The guys who are first and second year guys. I mean, that's where we're creating longevity. We're creating depth is with those bye weeks there.
It's not an easy schedule. You draw Boise and San Jose on the road. You got to play at Hawaii as well.
Yep.
I know you don't like to look beyond the first game. You're going to focus on Kansas right now. But when you're running this program in the big picture and you're looking at the Mountain West and the future and the Pac-12 and what's happening, how does that change your mindset as a coach when you know there's so much conference change coming up?
Well, you know, it's, you know, I'm going to worry about just this year with the Mountain West, of course. You know, our schedule is unique. We have one Pac-12 team on there as well. We have our work cut out for us. You know, the minute I saw the schedule come out, you know, all the positives about having a bye week every month, you know, but then you look at, you know, you're on the road against some of the top teams in the league. You know, again, Hawaii is they're a different animal. You know,
on their home,
exactly,
home court,
and that feels like a trap game to me right now.
Yep.
After you go to Oregon State, right?
Exactly, yeah. And so, and then one of the unique things too that I, you know, the month of November we don't leave the state of California. You know, we have two home games, and then we're at San Jose, which is about a 2.5-hour bus ride.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of, you know, nuances and uniqueness to this first go around in the Mountain West, but I'm excited about it. Tremendous league, great coaches. A relationship with a lot of them that I've either worked with, coached against previously, have gotten to know through this crazy profession that we're all in.
And I was just thinking, there was a picture today with all the coaches up there on the stage, and I was thinking, Matt, you know what? The Pac-12 coaches, man, I think if we had like an Anchorman type of battle, I think I'd take the Pac-12 coaches over the Mountain West coaches. I don't know. Sean Lewis is enormous. That dude, having him on your side, I think you could scrap a little bit. I am curious though, Coach, obviously you're at Fresno. Things are, you're excited about that endeavor. North Dakota State is such a fascinating program because of the success that it's had. We've seen College Game Day go there a couple times and it was phenomenal. What is Fargo like supporting that program? Being the head coach of that program, it has to be really comparable to high-level FBS jobs with the pressure I'm sure you felt in that city.
Oh, definitely. And it is. We've, you know, in my, you know, over a decade that I was there, you know, we routinely talked about being a mid-major program.
Yeah.
And that's how we were going to operate. That's how we were going to recruit. And they've continued from resources and facilities, tremendous support. Very similar to Fresno, and it's the biggest show in town.
Yep.
And when the 4th of July passes, the football itch hits, and everyone's talking about it. There's a high standard. There's a level of expectations that is through the roof at North Dakota State. And it's a great place. I owe a lot to, you know, my 10 years there. Matt Larson, the AD, is a tremendous friend of mine. I have a son that still plays there now. So that place is very important to my family.
Quickly, Cam Miller, you're going to have dinner with him tonight. What's he going to do for the Raiders? I think a very intriguing player.
He is, you know, he is going to be a sponge.
Yeah.
That's who he's been his whole career. He is going to learn and ask questions. And he is going to set himself up for a lifelong success in the NFL. And I don't know if he'll ever be a starter, if he'll be a lifelong backup. I don't know, but he's going to be in the NFL because he is a football player. He's a son of a son of a high school football coach. He just gets it. Great character. He's a young man you want to be around. And when he walks in the room, you go, who's that kid right there? Because he has those leadership skills.
6:30 Eastern, week zero. Big Fox, Fresno State, that's Kansas. Right. Not too shabby way to start it off. Coach Entz, appreciate it, sir.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me in today. Great to be here.
There he is, the head coach of Fresno State. They'll start the season off in week zero against the Kansas Jayhawks on the road. It is VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Man, the head coach of Hawaii. Perfect timing. We got the backdrop here all set up for you. Timmy Chang in studio. Coach, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. That backdrop is amazing.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
We know some people. We made some calls. We made sure we made sure that happened properly. Year number four for you, Coach. And, you know, I know it was a full rebuild for you going back to your alma mater, how special it was. We've had you on a couple of times. Where do you feel this program is at now, entering year four of your tenure?
Yeah, well, you know, you get guys in at their freshman year. You watch them grow in front of your eyes, you know, 18-year-olds, and that natural maturity starts to happen, and you know, you start to get a team where, you know, they understand what they need to do. You know, this Mountain West Conference it's a great conference, and the teams go in and battle day in and day out. And, you know, last year we were so close to winning some of these games. Yep. And so, you know, the offseason since January, you know, just the mindset moving forward is just, you know, where do we close the gap in those 1 to 2 plays a game that really make the difference in all the details and all the things. And so when you have those guys thinking that way, you have a player-ran team, you know, you're excited about going into year four.
You know, I was in Honolulu for 2 games last season. One close game you lost to UNLV, and one that you won, you beat Nevada in that game. But you gave the Rebels a hell of a fight that night. Mm-hmm. You've had back-to-back 5-win seasons. What's it going to take for you to get over the hump? What's your quarterback situation look like going into the season?
Yeah, you know, again, the Mountain West Conference is really tough. You know, watching Barry do, you know, in 2 years, doing what he did here at UNLV was very impressive. You know, building the culture, having a standard, his defense being tough. You could see he put the team together and his linebacker, you know, he just led that team. You kind of have that same feeling with what we're starting to do. Our defense is being led by Jamiah Otis, Peter Manuma in the back end. You start to give them the leadership and have it move forward. I think on our offense, you know, we're excited about Mike Alejado. You know, you know, he's a Bishop Gorman kid here in town and in Las Vegas, Hawaii born and Hawaii raised. And, you know, he's a different type of leader for us. And so he had a great game last year against New Mexico. And I think moving forward, you know, we're just excited to watch him play.
I was going to say, quick follow-up. I watched that game against New Mexico. Oh, yeah. High scoring, very entertaining game. He played really well. What's the identity of your offense going to be with him at quarterback this season?
Yeah, you know, going back to that game, you know, you might want to look it up, Tim. I mean, he threw for 470. He went 35 of 55, 5 touchdowns, took no sacks. It might be a true freshman starting record, you know. And, you know, for him, you know, he's a pocket passer, but he has the legs and mobility to get out and make plays on those. He just continues to make great decisions. I think one of the biggest intangibles he has, though, is just the leadership. Leading a Bishop Gorman program out here to a national title, you know, and he's playing with a lot of great players on that team, but he's the guy that they go through. It's the same way in the University of Hawaii, where he's the guy that we lean on and everything goes through him.
Timmy Chang, head coach of Hawaii, joining us here in studio. And, Coach, I know you guys want to get to bowl games. That's what you did as a player. That's what Coach Jones did so regularly, and you were so close a year ago. That said, I want to go back to that New Mexico game. As you mentioned, Micah was phenomenal, and New Mexico came in with 5 wins, and yeah. There was a lot of discussion. They'll win this game. They're motivated. Mm-hmm. And you guys went out there, and you took it to them. So how much can you build off of that, even though it wasn't a bowl game? Almost you look at that New Mexico game, can you look at it almost as a bowl game, building ahead for this upcoming season?
Yeah, you know, I just remember going into that game last year where we both had bye weeks. They came off a good win, a really good win at home against Washington State to set themselves up to go to a bowl game. We were coming off of a big loss at Utah State in snow, and we really had to kind of lick our wounds a little bit, reframe our mindsets, and just be, you know, very confident in what we can do and what we can bring moving into the next season. And so those guys. You know, for us, it was our bowl game, but it was a game where we can kind of show what we have the potential to do. You know, Braden got hurt that game. We knew Micah was going to have 2 weeks to get ready for this next game. It was 2 weeks for him to start to prepare with the rest of the offense. And you know, as you can see, we got some really special receivers. And so they just kind of really started to gel within those 2 weeks. You know, going back to when we played, you know, I played in three Hawaii Bowls. I had the opportunity to play in very special games.
Wasn't there a fight in one of those?
Yeah, against Houston. Yeah. Coach Art Briles, the great Coach Art Briles. It was one of those June Jones Art Briles like drag out knockout games on a Christmas day.
Yeah, Christmas day.
Yeah. You know, I think we put up on 100 points or so, but it was one of those games. But you know, those games are special, and they're special on the island. And I think our fans in Hawaii have a lot to be excited about with what we have on defense, offense, and also special teams.
I got a two-part question for you. So when you were quarterback for June Jones and you had those great Hawaii offenses, do you feel like you're close to bringing that back? I know that's a lofty goal, but that's your goal, I would assume, is to produce the same type of offenses.
I think so. I think you know, our brand of football in Hawaii, like you go to different places across the country, they have a brand of football. You go to Iowa, you know, they're not afraid to punt on fourth down. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just one of those things where, you know, people have their identity. Hawaii has an identity of throwing the football, and that's just what it is. You know, we play some really tough football. There's a lot of Polynesians with their hair flying around and hitting people when they come to the island, and we throw the ball in on that rock. And so there's just things, that traditions that you kind of just follow with teams, and Hawaii has a throwing background with some tough play.
All right, second part, how pivotal is this game against Stanford to open the season? I know you don't want to put too many eggs in one basket, but yeah. Stanford opened a 2.5-point favorite. Mm-hmm. I always like Hawaii as a home underdog. Now you're a 1.5-point home underdog. Yeah. The Stanford program is, let's say, in transition. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on here. So at this point, when you're looking ahead to the season opener, do you feel like it's a pick'em sort of game? It's a very important game. You feel good going into it?
Yeah, you know, it'll be a game where you know, we'll be at home. We'll be used to all the different things that Hawaii has to represent and bring to the table. So there's a comfort level there for us. You know, Stanford, what a unique situation. They get their quarterback, you know, leading the helm with Andrew Luck, and yeah. Their former quarterback and general managing. And so he's going to start to put together a whole list of items that has to get done to take his team back to where, you know, they were in those Orange Bowl days. And it's the same way at Hawaii. We're taking the team back to the days of 2000 and 2007 when we had a great run. And so, but the game itself, you know, it'll be a hard fought game. You know, they're going to be physical. They're going to be tough. They're going to play their brand of football. And you know, we're going to welcome them to the island and have some fun.
Is it challenging to prepare for Stanford because of to Matt's point, the transition that they're dealing with a lot of pieces leaving, with Troy Taylor, you know, being let go, Frank Reich, a former NFL quarterback, now running it. So for you, prepping for this game, is there a unique challenge for you guys?
Yeah, I think there's always challenges in prepping for games because there's, especially early on in the season, because there's a lot of unknowns that go into it. So are you going to see this? How do you prepare you guys for this? So really, you're trying to prepare for everything, right? And making sure that you cover your bases, whether, you know, you're trying to protect three down, four down fronts, or a type of style of you know, 11 personnel, 12 personnel, 21 personnel, how they run the ball, what type of play actions they're going to have, screens off of it. So, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, it happens in week zero and week one where you're kind of getting the feel out for what teams are about to do.
Timmy Chang, head coach of Hawaii, joining us here in studio. We only got about a minute left. This is the ninth island here in Vegas. What do you make of being back here at Circa? We've talked a bunch about this place. We get these games blasted on the big screen behind us late at night. So what do you make of being back here at Circa?
Oh, we love it. We love Circa. Obviously, the Hawaii folks love Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And so we love being the late night game here and being on this TV screen on Stadium Swim.
Yeah.
You know, and so anytime our fans across the country can watch us late night, we enjoy it. And so we love being that 6 o'clock Hawaii kickoff game. And we love for fans to tune in and make us their team.
Well, we can't wait for week zero. Maybe something in the works. We'll see what comes down the pipeline. Final thought with you, Timmy. Bringing back those Nike black uniforms this year?
Oh, excited. Excited. We're excited about it. You know, new deal with Nike, and I know our guys are fired up. You know, got some you know, I got some new gear that I get to rock tomorrow at our head coach's media day, and gonna look sharp.
Yeah, looking good. You'll be putting up those big numbers like you did back in the day. Timmy Chang and the Hawaii Warriors open up the season week zero, CBS national television. Not too shabby there out on the island. Coach, appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
There he is. Timmy Chang, the head coach of Hawaii. We got much more to come. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.